The following message is by Pastor John Piper. More information from Desiring God is available at www.desiringgod.org.
Cyrene, city on the coast of northern Africa, could boast her poet Callimachus and her son Carneades, the grand philosopher who founded an academy in Greece, a man who plundered Stoics just to mock their certitudes. And then the rock named Eratosthenes, who knew geography and overthrew the chief, it seemed, of every art and science in the world. The heart of all Cyrenians would leap, and every hand would rise and sweep in praise at every mention of their heroes and the ancient love of honor, power, and fame. Except the Jews. The little band who kept their adoration for the one who made the stars and moon and sun and all philosophers and arts and poets and 10,000 parts of earth and water, fire and air. There was a favorite Jewish prayer in that great city with its fame and history. Jews used to name their God against Cyrenian pride and say, "'Tis better to have died, O God, than drink Cyrenian wine. Did you my tongue for this design? Cyrene is not Jesse's stem, nor is this place Jerusalem. If I desire her vanity, cut out my eye that I might see. If I cast off the truth of old, cut off my hand that I might hold. If I forget the promised land, cut off my foot that I might stand. And if your promise disappear, cut off my ear that I might hear." 300 years the Jews had stood against the force that takes the good and dresses it like clowns and crowns the evil with a king with gowns. 300 years since Ptolemy had shipped them like commodity and merchandise from ports of Tyre and Alexandria. The fire of faith burned brightly where the prophets and the law and prayer were heard in synagogues each week among the temples of the Greek and Roman pantheon of gods. No great Cyrenian facades to mark the place where the word of the Creator God was heard. Just every seventh day, a glad and sober band of people clad for worship made their way to small and simple synagogues where all would listen to the promises that Christ would come, just as it says. And they would pray, "Come, Holy Light," and tell their children that it might be soon. "Messiah, may this day be born in Bethlehem." And they would say, "When this one shall appear, the eye and hand and foot and ear he will make whole. And what we've lost he will restore, nor count the cost 1,000-fold. And even some Cyrenians, the poor, would come and listen to the hope, and not a few believed and took their lot among the seed of Abraham. Rufina saw the pious sham in all the shrines and loved to tell how she came into Israel. She was an African and not a Greek or Jew by blood, but got her fathers from the ancient race of Libya. It's all of grace, she used to say, that Greeks should take my land and then, for my own sake, deport the Jews from far away that I might know the one true way to God, the one who comes to bear my sins and all my sorrows share. Rufina was a widow, and 3 sons would leave her ancient land and break her heart before a strange and awesome providence would change decades of weeping into joy. First, Simon left, the oldest boy. He said he wanted land and fields and lots of property and yields a lavish crop and brings good rents from lodgers who will live in tents and do the farming work. She woke and he was gone, never spoke a single word. The second son was violent. His way of fun was playing soldier in the square and robbing helpless children there at dagger point. Rufina tried to reprimand her son, but pride raged like fire and he was gone. And like the first, from that time on, he never would return. His name was Lucius. Military fame was all he dreamed. And so before he left, his little brother bore the imprint of revolt. When he was 5, he snuck away to see the harbor and the ships, and there the sailors stole him on a dare and sold him for a captain's slave. His name was Malchus, and the grave of his young father drank the tears day after day through all the years Rufina knelt there pleading for her boys. Some 20 years or more went by, and every day she kneeled to pray for Simon that the field would fail and put him in the way of God. For Lucius, that he slay no more, and from his blood-soaked feet look up, and there behold the sweet and tender face of God. And then for Malchus, time and time again, that somehow, somewhere, he might live to be a man, and God might give to him an ear to hear the word of truth and set him free. I've heard, O God, she prayed, that when the King Messiah comes, he will unbind and bring the captives from their chains and take their sins upon himself and make his righteousness their own. And so I pray, O God, that you would go and find my boys where they are lost, and make their paths by his be crossed. And so it came to pass in God's providence, Malchus, too thin for rigors on the sea, was sold in Palestine at 6 years old. The wife of Annas bought him at an auction with a simple vat of tanner's oil. She wrapped him in a priestly robe and took his thin and swarthy little frame into her arms and carried Malchus through the country up from Ascalon. That year, the king would place upon her husband's back the robe and choose him, Annas, high priest of the Jews. And so the boy grew up a slave to priests and learned how to behave and what to say and what to wear like other unbelievers there. For over 20 years he served the priestly house, and there observed precisely how to keep the face and every surface clean. The place was like a stainless marble stone upon a grave, and every bone within hypocrisy. Each year beneath the holy word, the ear of Malchus hardened to the truth. What mattered both in age and youth was that you keep your fruit unpeeled and everything within concealed. It took him 20 years, perhaps, to learn how not to feel. And gaps in his protection slowly closed his heart till every act was posed, and every tender part was seared, and every promise disappeared. The night was cold, and fear hung in the air. Old Caiaphas had been the high priest now for 15 years, and bore the burden of these fears this night because he plotted all week long to bring about the fall of Jesus in the garden where he always met his men for prayer. The plan was that the priests would stay behind, and Malchus would convey, with Judas' help, the Roman troop to find the Messianic group, perhaps in prayer, and take them bound to Caiaphas. Of course, the sound of such a movement through the night was heard, and there was time for flight or readiness to fight. But now, the time had come when Christ would bow before his enemies and pierce the hearts with something far more fierce than hate or stealth or any sword. So Judas came and kissed the Lord. At first, this was beyond belief to Peter. Yes, perhaps a thief, but not a traitor, not a vile and wicked rat. And with a smile, to take 3 years of truth and grace and throw it back in Jesus' face. He pulled his sword and would have slit the throat of Judas, but he hit instead the side of Malchus' head and severed his right ear. And red with blood he fell at Jesus' feet. In that split second of deceit and vengeance, Jesus raised his hand and no one moved. He loosed the band around his cape and knelt beside the bleeding slave. And then, to hide his face, he made a covering out of his cloak, and like a wing, he spread it over both of them. And there, outside Jerusalem, 1,000 miles from where he strayed, the Lord touched Malchus' ear and prayed. If he desires her vanity, cut out his eye that he might see. If he casts off the truth of old, cut off his hand that he might hold. If he forget the promised land, cut off his foot that he might stand. And if your promise disappear, cut off his ear that he might hear. Amen. And then the Lord arose alone and yielded to his foes, and everyone departed, but for Malchus on the ground. He shut his eyes and felt his ear. And then, from deep within, the great Amen of Jesus broke like heaving waves inside his heart. Like opening graves, the joy of life spread through his soul, and Malchus' heart and ears were whole. With Advent Candle 1, rejoice in this. When every hopeful voice is still, and we are deaf and dead to promise. Two hands, two eyes, I am complete. That in Gethsemane we will do some great sin. Know this. The skill of our physician is not less because we have no ears. Confess your dullness and prepare for steel. The Lord will hurt that he may heal.
Thank you for listening to this message by John Piper, pastor for preaching at Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. We invite you to visit Desiring God online at www.desiringgod.org. There you'll find hundreds of sermons, articles, radio broadcasts, and much more, all available to you at no charge. Our online store carries all of Pastor John's books, audio, and video resources. You can also stay up to date on what's new at Desiring God. Again, our website is www.desiringgod.org. Or call us toll-free at 1-888-346-4700. Our mailing address is Desiring God, 2601 East Franklin Avenue, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55406. Desiring God exists to help you make God your treasure, because God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in Him.